Davis Van Aptorp here with Jonathan Harding in this week's edition of the Tribuna podcast. Only two of us this week. A lot of things happened, especially with some of the news that's coming out today. But John, I think there's obviously one place to start, which is Timo Werner and his fantastic dive in Leipzig's 2-1 win against Schalke on Saturday. Of course, Leipzig won that game partly because Timo Werner won the penalty in the opening minute of the game and put away that same penalty. And then after that, Schalke was constantly coming back and coming from behind on the road, which is very difficult. The DFB said today that they weren't going to pursue any other discipline on Timo Werner's dive. But overall, we've talked about it a lot already off air, but what do you think of the whole incident and how the DFB is handling it?
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, it doesn't happen very often in the Bundesliga. It's not a league famous for diving, but apparently when it happens spectacularly.
Yeah, that was spectacular, to say the least.
Unbelievable. And I think what made it even more difficult to accept was the whole the lack of honesty after the game. You know, first of all, Bastian Dankert is trembling in his interview with Sky about what's being said, and he says that Timo Werner never asked him about, you know, the situation, never told him that there wasn't any contact with the goalkeeper. And then Timo Werner says the opposite and says that he looked at the referee and had sort of indicated and spoke to him and said, you know, this is the case, and sort of gave him a, almost implying that he gave him an opportunity to say no to the penalty or to change his decision. I think what really frustrates me is that Timo Werner just wasn't a big enough man about it, and obviously just didn't say, right, wasn't a foul. And, you know, the fact that he says, well, the pull from Naldo.
Yeah, let's give you some context.
I mean,
first.
Really.
There was, so basically, Timo Werner was breaking into the box. Naldo did touch his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know,
in like
a tug.
In an affectionate way, you know, like you would if you were like, oh, hey, do you want a coffee? You know, like, that's it.
Yeah, and then he being Timo Werner, basically went down after that, supposedly at the same time that Ralf Fährmann was trying to get out of the way, so he didn't do what...
There's no touch, absolutely.
There's no touch
in
the box.
And Fährmann moves away in time so that there's no contact. And, you know, Werner actually runs quite a distance after Naldo touches him, right? And I just think... You know, at youth level in Germany, you're not really taught to dive, right? It's like, it's not really the case, you know, and obviously you have this whole like, oh, you know, modern football, players dive. Yeah, okay, I understand that, but can we just draw a line and say there is a moment where the individual has to take some responsibility and be honest enough to say, you know what, I've played for it and this is ridiculous.
Well, funny that you mentioned honesty, because there has been a few players that have come forward, one of them being Miroslav Klose. I think that was the incident a few years ago that many people remember.
Definitely.
But even Aaron Hunt, I think that's the more recent example. I think it was 3 seasons ago, he was still playing for Werder Bremen, and he went to the referee and said, no, that wasn't a foul, that's not a penalty, I just went down.
I think if you want to promote a fair game, you know, then you have to actually do it. You can't just have it as a slogan or a hashtag. It has to be something that you actively pursue.
Well, we always wonder too. There's all these players also complaining that on corner kicks or in situations where there's a lot of players in a short area of the field, that there's a lot of contact that goes unseen, and then you see. Referees make calls like this and we get upset, but then the players can't also have it both ways. If you want to dive in the penalty area and make it look like a dive, then you also can't get upset when the referee doesn't call, when there actually is legitimate contact, because Bastian Dankert now there might be a penalty like that next week. And he may not give that penalty because he doesn't want to be humiliated in the same way that he was on Saturday.
And it'll be interesting to see how his refereeing is impacted, as you say, as a result of this decision. It'll be also interesting to see whether the DFB really do anything about his refereeing. Because, okay, they're not going to pursue Werner, which I also think is a mistake. Because you're effectively saying, they're saying that the referee's decision has stood. And that's what they're saying. They're like, okay, the referee, that's it, right? Mm-hmm. But... Can you, you know, you're saying that you want to uphold and and promote a fair sense of football. Mm-hmm. You have an opportunity here to inflict a suspension on a player for breaking the rules,
mm-hmm.
you know. And if,
but
then, and if, and
but
then,
is it breaking the
this
rules?
This is the question,
though?
Of course. Is
That's
it breaking the,
question. The
rules? Yeah, absolutely. But in my eyes, and you know, okay, my eyes aren't any authority, but it is breaking the rules because, and this is obviously a massively grey area. You know, you get into the level of dishonesty. What is what's dishonesty and what's not on a football field? If you can con the referee to win a situation when you know there might be situations, as you just said, where you have legitimately been fouled and it won't get called. But I think you shouldn't play the numbers game in that sense. I think you should play the game fairly. And Aaron Hunt is a great example. Miroslav Klose was the same at Lazio. He did the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about a player who has and it has received complete applause and credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it does you as an individual no harm. Mm-hmm. And look at Timo Werner in this situation. You know, he's the leading scorer for the club,
mm-hmm.
right? Leipzig, popular club, right? Not so much, yeah? This is a huge opportunity for them to have some positive PR spin on this club, right? Timo Werner goes down in that situation, gets up and says, you know what, not a penalty. Everyone can then say what they always say about Leipzig. They can keep saying what they want to say, but at least on the pitch, they play attractive and fair football. And they've missed the opportunity for that, and I think that's a huge miss.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, we also have to keep in mind that Timo Werner is 20 years old. And I think that's part of it. I mean, I saw him speaking to the media as a 20-year-old. And then when I saw Ralph Fam, I normally don't see players age. When I see them speaking to the media, they all don't say anything to reporters because they don't want to say anything. But, I mean, Ralph Fairman looked like the age that he was. I think he's 27 or 28 now. He said, look, this was sickening. And then Timo Werner says, well, that wasn't contact with Ralph Fairman, but I deserve the penalty anyways.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what a 20-year-old says.
Yeah, and that's the worrying thing because, you know, we're just talking about the fact that in coaching at younger levels in Germany, you don't have this promotion, you know. And I never encountered it when I played in Germany at a younger level, and I never had even recent years when I've played, I never felt like there was that kind of level of, you know, promotion of like, oh, just go down. Now, if there's contact and there's a foul, if there's a foul, obviously you're going to go down because there's a foul. But there was never a sense of actively promoting, you know, diving or faking a foul. And I'm not saying that Germany is a great example and by in the blue light of everything, but I just think it's a worrying trend to be setting.
Mm-hmm.
If you have all these kids under 12 who like are not learning to do that, but they are watching a Bundesliga game on a Saturday night, and one of their heroes or one of their idols does that,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're going to think, well, if he can get away with it, I can get away with it. And I know that that's a lot for a 20-year-old to think about from Timo Werner's perspective, but how long has he been in the football business? You know, he is a 20-year-old,
He's been a pro for a long time.
He's not a normal 20-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
So as much as he is 20, and I respect that that's a difficult task and there's a lot on his shoulders, you know, he's been in the Bundesliga for what feels like 5 years, right? And
mm-hmm.
he has a serious sense of responsibility, which I don't think he has
mm-hmm.
fulfilled. But the interesting question about this is how do you improve the situation?
I was going to say, because that's obviously the next part of this debate is how to improve it. And I think that the option that it comes up time and time again because of the way that technology is now is to do video replays. But I have to ask you point blank, John, would that have fixed this?
Well, I think, you know,
because you have to keep in mind at the situation, this was the foul came in 19 seconds after the game. The penalty call itself came in 19 seconds. Now, the penalty was taken, I think, a minute or two later because there was a lot of
disagreement.
Discussion and disagreement. But this, if there was a video review, maybe it would have been resolved quickly, maybe not. But there's been no precedent for it. So that means that you have time at the beginning of the game that basically where everything's supposed to be ratcheted up.
Absolutely.
And then you just take the air out of the game because you'd go into a video replay.
I think, absolutely. But I think you come down on two sides here.
Mm-hmm.
Either you are pro video technology because the technology is there and it's silly not to use it.
Yep.
And given the speed at which we've seen the goal line technology, right, how effective that can be, goal, no goal, there's a buzz on a watch or like, you know, it's pretty instant. Given that, That's your argument. Or you're on the other side and you say, well, it's part of football. Sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. Right? Those are the two approaches that you can have to the situation,
yes.
Which is what we were also just discussing about penalties. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
you get them, sometimes you don't. Personally, in the modern age and the way that the technology for goal line technology is at the moment, I don't think there's really a rational debate to be had. I think that video review in this scoring review, let's say, is something that can be implemented easily enough. Now, we both watch the NFL. Mm-hmm. There are lots of things wrong with that league, but every scoring play is reviewed. Mm-hmm. Now, before everybody who's listening to this says, yes, but it's a stop-start static game, screams down the podcast they're listening to. Yes, I agree it's a static game, but after every goal in football, you have to reset the play anyway because there's a kickoff.
And also, after every penalty decision, you have to do the same thing.
Exactly.
So what would stop you from...
There is enough time. Maybe penalty takers would have to get a little bit better at holding their nerve because they're going to have a bit more time in between winning the penalty and taking it. But I think there is more than enough time to have a system that says, you know what? Go to the fourth official or the man upstairs. Is it a foul? Is it a not? It's the same in rugby. You have a scoring review
rugby
for tries.
Rugby is the example I was going to bring up.
It's there all the time, right? And sometimes it can take a while, but there's no reason why we can't use the technology. And, you know, if we have it for goal line technology, you don't want to... And the key with this...
Goal line technology is instant, though.
And it is instant. Yeah, okay, but this is a little longer, but you're still talking about a pause in the game afterwards anyway. If it's a penalty, there's a pause in the game. If it's not a penalty, it's a goal kick, there's a pause in the game. If it's a goal from the penalty that you've awarded based on the evidence you've seen, it's also a restart. So there are opportunities to do it. And I think if you create a system that is swift enough, of course, and you
well,
have some...
That's the problem. Is there a system that is swift enough?
Do you want accuracy, though, or do you not? And sometimes you have to take the time to look at these things. And I think with the Timo Werner thing,
accuracy.
Yeah, of course, but look at the Timo Werner incident if we had video reviewing, right?
Yeah.
So Bastian Dankert says, right, I think that's a penalty. Check with Jeff upstairs, right? Yeah. Jeff says, he's had a look and he goes, no. You have no reason to award the penalty, right? Because the contact is minimal and he dives afterwards. Bastian Dankert says, are you sure? Yeah, okay, fine.
And I think that Jeff upstairs, our imaginary Jeff, would be able to see...
And he has all the angles. And I think, you know, so long as the sport of football, that is, doesn't get bombarded by technology and every single move is reviewed, which I don't think is necessary, I think things like this... You know, on scoring incidences or fouls like this, there's no reason why you can't go upstairs and have a look. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, with goals from 30 yards that go in, you don't, or like tap ins, you don't need to review them because you don't. Mm-hmm. But
also, to be fair to Bastian Dankert, he was most likely chasing the play. This was a really fast
19 seconds in, it's very difficult.
He sees Ralf Hammern go to the ground and he sees Timo Werner fall over. I mean, if I was a referee, I'd probably...
Sure.
I think that was actually a brave call for him to make.
Yeah,
19 seconds into a game, absolutely. He says, you know what, I thought that there was contact. He went down, there should have been a penalty.
But we would be saying that Bastian Dankert was the performer of the weekend if he had been even braver and not called it. Because actually, how much praise would he be getting now if he hadn't awarded the penalty? Because quite frankly, it wasn't one. Right. And I know that the technology argument is one that will rage on forever, but why not trial it? Mm-hmm. Why not see what it's like? Why not see if it's a possibility that could work?
Well, I mean, there's obviously the argument of where would you try it, too.
Well,
I mean, where would you try it
in the Bundesliga? I'm sure they're not going to try it to begin with in the Premier League or anything, but it's worth a go.
I mean, just to go over this really quickly, I mean, the goal line technology only came about because they used it at a Club World Cup. Which nobody even, probably half the listeners didn't know there was a Club World Cup.
Well, I think it's because it's one of those pointless events. Let's make these pointless events.
Battlegrounds for these.
Exactly.
For this kind of discussion. But we're going to move on from this discussion. If you have any other thoughts, tweet us at Tribuna Podcast. And if you disagree with us, at JohnBlog66.
I'm sure that
Davis_Vinopter.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of
But let's move on, because there's actually a really good... there's also something really good to talk about, and it's the way that Dortmund performed against Gladbach.
Didn't need a video review with this one.
Exactly. There was... it looks like they're starting to get the band back together. Marco Reus made his first Bundesliga start since returning. He had 3 assists in the game. Ousmane Dembele had a goal. Aubameyang added 2 more, giving him 15 for the season as they go on and absolutely trounce Gladbach 4-1. We'll get to Gladbach in a second, but John, you were really happy with what you saw from Dortmund.
Yeah, it was just fantastic to see. I think Marco Reus is such an important figure for the club. I don't, really shouldn't underestimate that, especially given the departures that they've had in this summer, you know, with the loss of Gundogan and Hummels and Lewandowski in recent years. It's really, really important that they hold on to Marco Reus. And I don't think he's going to go anywhere, but, you know, he's been injured and the guy's made of glass. And I've talked about this recently. You have to really worry about his, you know, the longevity of his career if this persists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have someone who is, on the basis of this weekend, such a talented footballer being injured every month or two. Because, you know, from Dortmund's perspective, they miss him, basically.
Yeah.
Yes, okay, they have a lot of talented players, but, you know, Shinji Kagawa's been out of form. Mario Götze is slowly getting back to form. Dembele, this was his best game in a Dortmund shirt.
Yeah, but this was after, what, 12 Bundesliga games? This was his best one.
Yeah, but
so.
You can do it without Royce, but obviously with Royce in form and fit, he's fantastic.
Well, I mean, when Royce arrived, I mean, that's really when Dortmund became one of the most elite teams again. They didn't go to the Champions League final until Marco Royce was there, and Marco Royce played in that Champions League final.
I mean,
in 2013,
their resurgence after, you know, in recent years, I think that's what a lot of people have in mind. Obviously, their Champions League winners back in the day with Lars Ricken and all that, but they've obviously had a dip and, you know, disappeared for a bit, and they've come back. And I think for a lot of modern fans, it's easy to forget that this is the way that they play now. The nature of their football and the success that they have hasn't always been the case. I think that Marco Reus, as you say, is certainly a key figure, you know, and that's why, as I just said, it's really important for them that he's not only fit but playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And on, you know, this weekend he was absolutely fantastic. And I think what's really inspiring for me is the way that Reus and Aubameyang and Dembele as well now have a connection. There's an understanding, you know. And look at the way that Reus backheels for Aubameyang's second goal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's unbelievable. Like, he goes on a run, he just knows that he's going to be there. And I think one thing, we talk about players not being honest enough or play, you know, footballers and blah, blah, blah. Look at the happiness that Aubameyang and Marco Reus play with,
mm-hmm.
particularly Aubameyang. I mean, I don't think we make enough of footballers under a lot of pressure. Yes, they earn a lot of money. They live a very privileged life. But the guy evidently loves playing football, and he loves playing it in this team because he scores all the time. He has players around him that understand him on completely another level. And when it all clicks, like it did on the weekend, wow. You know, absolutely brilliant.
So is he the key to bring Dortmund back to the top of the table? Obviously Dortmund have other bigger problems, but...
I think Marco Reus plays a big part in their lead, their charge back up the table. I think what will be more interesting for me is because I think this season in the league, you know, Dortmund suffer from this, oh, they'll be good next year. I think they've been labelled with that constantly recently, and it's been a bit of a problem for them because I think actually they want to be good now. And this weekend shows that they can be good now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about consistency. And, you know, there's a lot of criticism for Thomas Tuchel, who basically criticised his own team after the win against after the defeat against Frankfurt and said, hey, we didn't look like we deserved a point from the first training session.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not many managers would come out and basically criticise their team directly in the media. And a lot of people said, well, that's not a good idea. You know, Tuchel's lost the dressing room, blah, blah, blah. Well, actually, I think he knows more about this team than anybody else.
I think he's...
Look at that response, you know. Okay, he might be an extremely intense manager, but the guys obviously know what to expect, what is expected of them.
Mm-hmm.
And on Saturday, they delivered it to a T. Now, it's all about consistency.
We were talking about bravery with Bastian Danker before. I mean, I think it was brave for someone like Thomas Tuchel, who... he doesn't have the reputation of Jurgen Klopp. He doesn't have the reputation of Jose Mourinho or someone like that. And he went into the media and he did what he thought had to be done, which is rip his team to shreds in the media. And like you said, we obviously saw the response that it generated. And I think honestly that last week was a defining moment for his career.
Hugely. It's always going to be a test of their character last week.
Yeah. I mean, he obviously still has to translate some results. I mean, he hasn't been able, but he also mostly finally was able to get the better of Bayern. And now it really seems like he's stepping up into that upper echelon of coach that maybe he wasn't in before.
I think the key would be whether he can keep that going, because he has to win something, you mm-hmm. know, and I think that that's the problem that Dortmund have had in recent years. They get to cup finals, or they get to defining knockout games in the Champions League or in Europe, you know, looking at the Liverpool game in the Europa League, and getting into later stages of seasons, and they have to start to put some form together. I mean, this is the hardest thing as a coach. You know, Tuchel, you can't have a Dortmund team that beats Gladbach 4-1 and looks scintillating, mm-hmm. but the week before was absolutely woeful against Frankfurt. You know, you need that consistency. It sounds obvious to say, but given the quality of Dortmund's disposal, you would kind of expect it from them. And I think what's encouraging is not only that Marco Reus is back, you know, leading the team, giving the Südtribüne a bit more of, you know, hope, but also inspiring other players. Aubameyang smiling again, scoring again. Dembele. Mm-hmm. We really need to talk about how well he played. You know, finally making good decisions.
Yeah, I think all of this is coming. We'll get to Dembele in a second, but I think all of this is coming at the perfect time.
Absolutely.
Because this is the point in the season where if you go into the winter break with confidence, that affects the entire 6-week break. Or I don't know how many weeks it is this year, but the entire break. The way you train, the way that you play your friendlies after that, if you have that confidence of those last few games, that can really, Dortmund can really take off from here.
Huge. Makes a massive difference.
And I think that's what this response, that's the biggest part of this response that I really like.
But the key is now that in their remaining games before the winter break, that they just bulldoze, that they just keep going, you know. And I think if you go into Christmas off the back of, three or four comprehensive wins in a row, then you're absolutely right. You're raring to go, you know, and okay, you could argue that maybe Dortmund don't want the winter break at that point, but mm-hmm. you know, they need that. They need that for their squad, but the league needs that mm-hmm. for the level of competition. Because imagine if we end up at the Christmas break with Leipzig, Bayern and Dortmund all racing towards top spot. I mean, mm-hmm. Bundesliga, boring? What? New?
No way. So let's talk about Ousmane Dembele, because the reason why we definitely have to talk about him is because Tuchel said that this was one of his best performances of the season, and I think that we not just John. I know Jonathan has basically given most of the heat to Ousmane Dembele, but I think we've all been pretty hard on him, even though he's a 19-year-old kid playing in his first season in a top league. But what did you see specifically from him on Saturday that you really liked?
His decision-making was a lot better, but I also thought his goal, basically, you know, a defining point in the game basically kills the game, and there's a clear option to pass, but he says no, and he scores, and I like that, because in that situation, he knows that he has to score, but he's got the confidence to say, I'm going to score. You know, he's just going to do it. And I think it's a real sign of how far he's come.
Yeah.
Because dribbles out defenders, takes that shot, kills the game. But generally, all game, his understanding. You know, his passing was much better. His, you know, everybody knows that he can basically embarrass defenders on a regular basis. But it was what he did with the ball in the final third in connection with Reus and Aubameyang that was just really, really encouraging.
When you look at that goal specifically, and you saw, you saw him actually, like, it felt like he took a breath, composed himself, and he hammered it. He hammered that shot into the
absolutely.
Back of the net. That's not the kind of shots that we have seen from him this season. Most of them have flown over the bar because he's just trying to get a shot up as quickly as he can, because that's what he was able to do in France, and that was successful.
I think it's an excellent point, you know, that he definitely took a moment. He definitely took a moment and said, right, I'm here, I'm good enough to be here, and I will keep getting better. And he was probably one for everybody who's doubted him, and that includes me. I'm not saying I doubted his quality. His quality's obviously been there, but it was just a case of having to improve that little bit more, which I think he did in this game alone.
Yeah. Is Dortmund going to be in the top four by Christmas, do you think?
By Christmas? I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes. I think Thomas Tuchel can't make the kind of statements that he made after the Frankfurt defeat too often, because then you do start to lose the dressing room if you keep saying this was unacceptable. But I think it was definitely, as you said earlier, a turning point. a rallying cry. Mm-hmm. You know what? I've been here long enough now. Let's get this stuff together. Let's go. And I think, I genuinely believe that Dortmund can power on now and be in the top four, yeah.
Well, the top four, I mean, I think it's definitely there for them. I mean, I think if they, I mean, they just have to, basically the way that the Bundesliga has gone, if they win out before Christmas, if they win their last three games, then they're going to be in the top four, in my
opinion. I think the top four by Christmas is very realistic. But yeah. I think what will be interesting will be the top three or the top two.
Exactly.
By the end of the season. Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously the losing side of that game just did not look to good well at all. I mean, Rafael had that really early goal, and it's good that he's back into the team. But there's clearly, I mean, this isn't the Gladbach team that used to go on the road and actually take a run at teams. That team, I think, was left behind when the season ended last season. Now, André Schubert has now, I think, he's winless in his last seven games.
Eight
games. So. Yeah. He is definitely somebody that he has to be on the hot seat now.
Yeah, he is definitely. I mean, I think this is the worst record that Gladbach have been. It is the worst that they've gone without a win in 3 years. Eight games without a win. So, I mean, they're in serious trouble. And I think it's, you know, everybody said at the beginning of last season, wow, they lost the first five games of the season. Wow, you know, intense beginning to the season, right? But hold the phone, right? They recovered and had a sensational finish to the year and stuck into a Champions League spot. But that was five games. We are 13 games into the season. Mm-hmm. Gladbach are in a relegation fight. They will probably be saved by the fact that there are at least two teams worse than them this season. But that says a lot about them and about other teams who are in a similar situation, about where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, André Schubert, this is my one sentence on André Schubert, if you had to define his situation. He has looked less comfortable in the job the longer he has been there.
Is he the problem?
I think he is part of the problem. Granit Xhaka being sold in the summer for, 40, 45 million is huge for the club. Did they really do enough to replace him? They lost Nordveit as well. Let's not forget that. Tobias Strobel.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, let's not forget that. Because the guy that came Tobias Strobel is not Harvard Nordfeit.
No, he's not.
Not even close.
Not even close. And Christoph Kramer just doesn't even look like the player that was in the Germany squad 2 years ago. And I think he's just slow. Kramer doesn't necessarily generate the ball or move the ball around as quickly as he should. And the base of that midfield, okay, Mahmoud Dahoud is quality, but he's, you know, what? So young, you can't put all the pressure of Gladbach's midfield on him alone.
Yeah.
And he likes to drive forward a bit more. He's a bit more of a Gundogan kind of player. But you still need your base of your midfield to be solid enough. And I think that's a big concern. Gladbach's defence is pretty young. Andreas Christensen's been great, but Elvedi's made a couple of mistakes now and again.
Mm-hmm.
They've lost the leadership that Martin Stranzl used to provide. Jan Sommer's having to make a lot more saves, having to deal with more shots. I mean, I think there are a lot of concerns. I think some of that is on the pitch and the fact that they didn't do enough to deal with Xhaka's departure. But Schubert has to take some degree of responsibility for that, so does Max Eberl. And, you know, there's a lot around the club that isn't making life easy for them at the moment. Obviously, this run of games where they haven't won, this whole Max Eberl wanted by Bayern rumour isn't helping them. This whole, is Schubert going to be the manager, isn't helping them. But the biggest problem is, you have, three or four games left now before the winter break. If you're saying on your stances, if you're Max Eberl, we're not going to make a change before the winter break. Because if we want to make one, we want to give the new manager time. Right? But can Gladbach really afford to drift through the next three games. Because, you know, that's a dangerous approach given their situation in the table.
Well, the next, I
think the 13th.
We looked this up before, but let me double check again. The next three of the games are actually very doable. I mean, they play. They obviously have the big game against Barcelona on Tuesday, but
yeah, that doesn't help either. That tough European campaign. I mean, they didn't do enough to buy for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're trying to be a Champions League regular in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, but they play Mainz, and then they play Augsburg, and then they play Wolfsburg. Those are three teams that I mean, they could easily run those three games, but you don't have any confidence
And the thing is that, you know, Mainz are a team that are 4 points ahead of them in the table, and Mainz have a European hangover, probably arguably even bigger than Gladbach's, right? Because they struggled and yet they're doing better than them in the league. And Mainz are always one of those teams that are just uncomfortable to play. And then you take the other two games, Augsburg and Wolfsburg. Augsburg have more points than Gladbach, or a point more, right? So, yeah, theoretically, Augsburg is a winnable game. Wolfsburg is... Yeah. And here we are. Wolfsburg against Gladbach is supposed to be a battle for a European spot.
Yeah.
It's actually a relegation battle.
Mm-hmm.
So Gladbach haven't got it easy. And actually, the way that those games go might well be defining for Schuber. But I think he's been in the job long enough. And for all of the positives, and there were positives, you know, every time that Bayern Munich under Pep Guardiola came there, I always thought that Schubert did a great job. And he's shown that at times in the Champions League he can get things right at the highest level. But I just don't know whether you can do enough. Like you always say, is a valiant Europa League or a Champions League campaign worth a dip in Bundesliga performance?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
I said this about Wolfsburg under Dieter Hecking. Everybody, it was exciting that Wolfsburg played Real Madrid, and yet...
In the quarterfinals too.
And yet, they finished 10th that season, I think, and now they're in a relegation spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
And Hecking's gone,
and they're still in a relegation spot. So, I mean, I don't know... Oh, they're not. There you go. They're nearly in a relegation spot. They're in a relegation fight.
There you go.
I mean, it's a case of what's worth it, and I think that clubs have to make smarter decisions. I think that Schubert has got to go, and that's a very tempting. Yeah. It's an exciting job for anyone.
Yeah, that was actually Connor Garrett's question on Twitter. He says, "Is time up?"
Yeah, I know that Connor's not a big fan of Andre Schubert, and I can understand why. I personally think that he shouldn't be. He's not the whole problem, but he's. I think he's a big enough part of the problem that Gladbach have to be brave.
I don't think a lot of people recognized how fragile Gladbach actually was. I mean, I think Granit Xhaka was already out the door, basically, when he left in the summer.
Huge player to lose as well, you know, very aggressive leader, captain.
But obviously, they were in the Champions League. I think a lot of people expected them to actually take a step forward. And we kind of forgot what the downside of not taking a step forward is. And this apparently is the downside. Dortmund's downside of not taking a step forward is like fifth place or is seventh place. I mean, maybe they're in the relegation spot at the end of the first half, but they make it back into Europe. That's Dortmund's downside. Gladbach's downside, they could very easily, if things do not go their way, they could very easily be playing a relegation playoff.
Well, I think the only reason that they won't be is because they'll be saved by the fact that there are probably three teams worse than them this season. Mm-hmm. But you're right. They can definitely be sucked in. And you don't have to look too far back in Gladbach's history to see that was the case.
Exactly. That's what I also... Yeah.
So, I mean, they have a lot of work to do. And I think it will be interesting. But they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're not alone. I was going to get onto that next. Wolfsburg, of course, are in a similar boat as them. That, like we said, is going to be a relegation battle right before Christmas between Gladbach and Wolfsburg. And also, Bayer Leverkusen is also a big team underperforming.
Yeah, I mean, Wolfsburg, we just kind of talked about that just now. I mean, they're 2 points clear of relegation. They're 2 points clear of relegation after 13 games. Mario Gomez transfer has basically failed. Valerian Ismail is uninspiring. And the fact that there weren't that many big names applying for the job tells you, I think, exactly the kind of situation that Wolfsburg find them in. I don't know whether Klaus Allofs has done a good job of managing the squad or the situation, especially with Julian Draxler, who I wrote something on him yesterday. And yes, I think he should just grow up and behave like a man. But yeah, let's leave Wolfsburg to one side because, I mean, quite frankly...
Let's talk about their result just really quickly. They lost 2-3 against Hertha Berlin, and we both saw that game together. It was just a collapse.
It was massively a collapse. And I think, you know, collapsing at home, they still haven't won at home this season.
Yeah.
And they took the lead twice.
Yeah.
And they lost the game. And, you know, stupid decisions.
And somebody got sent off and there was a late penalty, a stupid penalty by Daniel Caligiuri. I mean, there was no... there's no discipline. There's no, when things start to go bad, I mean, they fold in on themselves.
And you know, your best player, your most expensive player, is sat on the bench and comes on for the last 12 minutes. What does that say about his professionalism? What does that say about the current situation in the squad? Okay, perhaps it makes Valerian Ismail a brave coach because he's the one who took the decision to drop him for the first time. But Wolfsburg, you know, we want to see this. You can't have a club. You're talking about the Bundesliga. You're talking about a league that prides itself on clubs doing it the right way, which is why Leipzig is such a problem for so many, and which is why Hoffenheim and Wolfsburg and Leverkusen, a lot of them are not well admired for a lot of their dealings in the past. Mm-hmm. Now, then everybody, or not everybody, but lots of people get excited about the fact that Wolfsburg are in the Champions League and they're playing Real Madrid and they beat Real Madrid. And the amazing thing is they're the last team to beat Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, Real Madrid have lost, right? Yeah. So, but here we are. How sustainable is that success if it's poorly managed? Wolfsburg might be relegated this season.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're talking about Wolfsburg in the second division and everyone will leave that club if that happens.
Yeah, including some of the players that, I mean, Borja Mayoral was a player that came on loan. They also got this young kid, this young teenager from Dinamo Zagreb. He might go as well. He was a 6 million euro ad this summer.
I think.
And he might go as well.
I think.
And that just, I was talking about Gladbach being fragile. I mean, Wolfsburg is probably the most fragile club in the Bundesliga.
Massively.
Even more than Darmstadt, who just fired their coach today, Norbert Meyer. They fired their coach today. But Wolfsburg, to me, are still more fragile because they have more to lose. They have put so much into this club. VW has put so much into this club. And basically, it's been maybe some of the worst investments that we've seen in the Bundesliga in a long time.
I think Wolfsburg have a good history of doing that, and unfortunately, they look like they're going to repeat themselves. But you're right. I mean, the Darmstadt news isn't necessarily surprising, but I think they're pressing the panic button because they're worried. But I think their fans are also realistic, and they say, hey, look, you know what? We had two seasons of Bundesliga football. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, and we're going to take it. But I'm pretty...
They're still ahead of Wolfsburg.
No, they're 2 points behind.
Or they're just behind Wolfsburg. And they're at some point, they're definitely ahead of Wolfsburg this season. And this is Darmstadt, the team that everybody thought was going to be relegated.
Absolutely, but Darmstadt beat Wolfsburg this season.
Yes,
so,
that
I mean,
too.
You're talking... I mean,
so that's how bad Wolfsburg have
been
this season.
That they lost to Darmstadt.
So Wolfsburg has been bad. Leverkusen has been off to their worst start in 10 years.
I mean, Leverkusen, worst start in 10 years is one thing, but... You know, Leverkusen are one of those clubs that you feel like they should be making more progress. And they too, like Gladbach, are trying to be Champions League regulars. And okay, they're not that far off the pace. They have 17 points and they're still, you know, ish. But you're still talking about 7 points to sixth, right? That's 7 points isn't, you know, it's probably a bit more than you want. Roger Schmidt's been there since, 2014, I think, right? So it's long enough now to start asking questions and being like, right, can you get things moving a bit more, you know? And I think, I don't know, I feel like Leverkusen shouldn't be dropping off. And okay, on the one hand, they have been, you know, hit a little bit hard by injuries, most notably Kevin Campbell today. He's out for 8 weeks. That's a huge loss for them. He's basically like Schmidt's version of himself on the field. He's like his number one man. You've lost Bellarabi, who I don't really rate, but is important for that team.
Mm-hmm.
And you've lost Kevin Folland, who's the main guy that you signed to basically back up Chicharito this season. And you've got Chicharito on nearly 500 minutes without a goal. And Leverkusen can't take penalties because they've missed all four this season. So, yes, there's a certain element of bad luck in there. But at the same time, how long... And I wrote this on Saturday. How long do you... on Sunday, sorry. How long do you go with this bad luck before it becomes bad form and just bad play and bad execution? I mean, that penalty is woeful from Chicharito on the weekend, and you miss the chance of 3 points because of bad play. And I think Schmidt has to ask himself, you know, he's up and down, he's an emotional guy on the sidelines. It feels like Leverkusen are just sort of wobbling a bit, and are they going to fall over? Because they have, you know, they I'm not sure whether they can really afford to. And, you know, European football consistently is the most important thing for these clubs.
Well, let's try to get to the root of this problem, because obviously we just mentioned a lot of clubs. Leverkusen, we mentioned Wolfsburg, and we mentioned Gladbach. But there's also other teams that are underperforming. I mean, Schalke had a terrible start. Mainz, who a team that a lot of people expected to be near the top of the table again, they have been bad. What is there? Is there a bigger trend here, or is this just basically for some reason this season the teams that are in European football are not executing?
I think in Leverkusen's case, they didn't do enough with the squad. Schmidt's decision to keep the squad small was a baffling one because they've just not been able to deal with the losses in terms of injuries, and they haven't been able to compensate for poor form and swapping players out. Gladbach, as we just talked about, is midfield that and the defence. I think that's just a case of learning and experience being. Perhaps the coach, I think, has come to a point where they might have hit the ceiling with them. You could argue the same with Schmidt at Leverkusen. Wolfsburg are in a complete mess, and I think they needed a stronger character than Valerian Ismail to sort it out, but maybe he'll prove me wrong, but they continue to make unbelievable mistakes on the pitch. Mainz, I don't know, Mainz, enjoying European football, you have that usual hangover.
It's but the reason, to be expected. The reason why I'm bringing this up because...
And Schalke, started badly, but they're playing brilliantly now.
But the reason why I bring this up is because, obviously, Europe. These aren't the only clubs that are struggling after playing European competition. And I think a lot of people are getting cynical with the way that European competition is going. Is that the main culprit of why with this? Or do you think it's also because the fact that Hoffenheim, Frankfurt, and Leipzig have fired the right people at the right time?
No, I think that certainly plays a role, but I don't know whether European football is the excuse for these teams. I think decision-making based on European football might be one thing. Gladbach weren't helped by the fact they had a tough group, but they should have prepared better, regardless of their opponents, for a European campaign. If you're going to be battling on three fronts, and okay, maybe the Pokal doesn't really count because you play one game every 10 years, basically, is what it feels like. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be battling on a European front and a domestic front, and you want that domestic front to be a regular Champions League challenging run, then you have to accommodate that in your management and in your squad. And I don't think Gladbach have done that. I don't think Leverkusen have done that. And Wolfsburg certainly haven't done that, and they haven't got the right characters in the team. I mean, the fact that Kuba Blaszczykowski, who's a 100% committed diehard footballer, isn't having the positive effect on the squad that you would want says a lot about the atmosphere in Wolfsburg at the moment. Mm-hmm. Mainz and Schalke, Schalke have won every game in Europe, so I think they're bucking the trend there. And now that they've been able to use Europe as a platform to play better in the Bundesliga,
I think there's just this atmosphere. I think you mentioned it. There's this atmosphere with these teams of unpreparedness.
Certainly, with the bigger
clubs, they weren't prepared.
Certainly with
the big clubs weren't prepared. They weren't prepared for their European responsibilities, and they weren't prepared for some of the Bundesliga opponents that they faced. And I think that's a huge testament to teams, even teams like, I mean, Dortmund is struggling a little bit, but it could have gotten a lot worse. You know, Bayern have struggled a little bit, but after Pep Guardiola, it could have gotten a lot worse. But there are so many teams in this league that aren't prepared. And that is fascinating to me, that that these five or so teams aren't prepared all at the same time, and it's made the Bundesliga completely wide open and interesting.
I think unprepared is certainly plays a part in it. I think that's long-term planning as well. But you have to also say that the league has improved. Mm-hmm. Generally, the league has improved. They've made smart additions in terms of managers. They've made smart additions in terms of players. And the overall quality of the league has improved dramatically from the year that Bayern won the treble. Mm-hmm. I think from that year, you know, where Bayern, when Fürth were in the league, I can't remember the year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the quality of the league at that point, even when Dusseldorf were there, there was a lot of mediocre football being played at times. And the league quality now is higher than it ever has been. You know, teams are playing more aggressively, and I think you can't really underestimate. I mean, it's typical for managers and players to say we have to give 100% on the weekend because you can't, you know, usual media statements. Mm-hmm. But I think for the first time in a long time, it's true that you can't take your foot off the gas. Maybe against Darmstadt and Ingolstadt you can, but or against almost every other team, you can't. I mean, Hamburg probably as well. I mean, Hamburg-Darmstadt was like the best advert for second division football in Germany I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamburg won, yay, finally, 13 games in, finally did it. But that's what I'm saying. Apart from the teams at the bottom, and I think that's why maybe a Wolfsburg or a Gladbach or a Leverkusen haven't looked prepared, because they weren't prepared for the rest of the league to improve.
Yeah. So let's get sort of some questions now. Obviously, we mentioned Mr. Garrett's, but let's go to some other ones here. We have Martin Stein 23, who says, who is going to be in the top four come May 2017? Basically, who's going to be the top four at the end of the season? I will tell my prediction up front, although it's probably completely wrong now. I had Bayern, then Dortmund, then Leverkusen, and then Schalke, and then Leverkusen.
Well, I didn't predict at the beginning of the season, so I have the advantage.
Exactly.
And I will say Leipzig are going to win the league.
Okay.
Bayern, then Hoffenheim third, and Dortmund fourth.
I think Bayern is still going to win. I think Bayern is still going to be number one. Leipzig are definitely number two. The title is going to be between the two of them. Dortmund will be three, and I would probably say that Schalke probably makes it back in the top four.
Well, I think,
and that's a bold prediction,
yeah, bold.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I'm also counting on teams like Hoffenheim and Cologne. Cologne started to come down back to earth a little bit, even though they obviously lost to a very good team over the weekend, although it was a 4-0 loss, which you never see
with Cologne.
Never see with Cologne, but I think both of those teams will come down, and I think Schalke, I think that Weinzierl has taken his advantage of his time well and has gotten this team back to a confident place where they could challenge for a top four spot.
I think it will be between Hertha, Frankfurt, Schalke, Leverkusen, 4, 5, and 6 for the Europa League spots, because I can't not believe in Julian Nagelsmann.
Okay.
I think he is actually going to get Hoffenheim into the Champions League.
Mm-hmm. Joshy1991 says, can Hamburg avoid the drop again? They seem to have done so the last now 53 years or 50 whatever years. Somebody can correct me. But can they avoid the drop again with the win on Sunday?
Yeah. I hate to say it, but
I think can is the key word,
yeah,
there.
I mean,
I think they definitely can.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Darmstadt and Ingolstadt, as we said, I think many people said at the beginning of the season, are nailed on now. I think Darmstadt, more so, are nailed on to be relegated.
Yeah.
And I think Ingolstadt, as much as they have improved since Walpurgis came in, I think they are also pretty much, you know, looking like they're going. So Hamburg will probably find themselves in and around the playoff spot once again. And that just will be incredible. And then it will be a case of who really wants it from the second division.
I think people forget that there's actually good players on Hamburg's team.
No, they're not a bad team, but they just defend badly, and they've just looked really, really poor. But what will be interesting is how do they go hit from here? Because they've won a game, mm-hmm. they've finally got that monkey off their back.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to finish? You know, are they going to finish strongly? Because Wolfsburg, Bremen, and Gladbach are all the teams above them. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. At Finlay Reed on Twitter says, will Freiburg be able to continue their solid start and avoid the relegation battle?
I don't think Freiburg will be relegated. I think they're fine. I think they too, I mean, they look far too good at times. I think Streich knows the league. He knows the way to play the game. But I also think they will be saved by the fact that there are much worse teams than them this season. So
yeah. Streich does not belong in the coaching conversation.
No.
Many of the people that we mentioned so far, they've committed to Streich for a very good reason, and I think that he's going to find a way to at least keep them up this season. We'll see. I mean, his players, he may not have the big name players that people recognize, but I mean, there's a reason why they're so good at home.
Yeah.
And that's because of Christian Streich. All right, so now let's shout the things from the Tribuna that we want to shout, and let's get out of here. John, what do you want to shout this week?
Just a brief mention. I don't want to basically regurgitate the article I wrote on Julian Draxler, but I can't stand anybody who says it must be really difficult. He said it was difficult for him to play because he was booed. And I think, to be honest, I can't understand the argument. I think he's behaving completely ridiculously. He needs to grow up. Needs to play better, because if he wants to leave the club, then his best way of leaving the club is playing better regularly. And Wolfsburg aren't going to get any better if he keeps whinging.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just grow up. I've had enough of Julian Draxler behaving like an idiot, because he's a talented footballer. We saw it in the Champions League last season. We saw it at the European Championships for Germany this summer. But I can imagine that a number of top European clubs who may well be interested in him will be turned off because of his character. Mm-hmm. I would not, and obviously I matter very little in the conversation of professional football, but would not want to be in a dressing room with someone like that.
Well, I mean, if I was to go even further, if I was a club looking to sign Julian Draxler, I mean, why would I want to go higher than maybe 40 million euros?
I mean, Wolfsburg would want a lot. They want more than they bought him for. But to be honest, the way that he's behaving, he's attracted enough attention negatively that clubs know that his price has gone down. So,
yeah. So, what I want to shout is obvious is I don't usually talk about Bayern too much because I do call myself a Bayern fan. But I wanted to say something about Philipp Lahm, because he's played in midfield, I think, the last three games, if I'm correct. And I think that is the perfect transition for him as he makes his final last hurrah.
It's the final countdown.
The final countdown to his retirement. I think that there hasn't been that kind. I mean, Xabi Alonso obviously provides Bayern with that kind of leadership in midfield. But I think Philipp Lahm would do a better job of that, especially since he is the club. I mean, if Christian Streich is Freiburg, I mean, Philipp Lahm basically was born in the cradle of Bayern Munich. So I think that this is a perfect transition for him. I think I think it's a little bit of an adjustment. He needs to learn how to manage his energy. It's somebody that's his age, but I think that his presence there is now more important than it is at the fullback position.
Hey, I'm just interested to see what Ancelotti does, given that he likes playing 4-3-3 and he's fairly stubborn with it.
Although he moved away from it this weekend.
Yeah, although he moved away from it this weekend. Too good effect in the end. But, I mean, Lahm in a 4-3-3 is a no-go for me. I think if in a 4-2-3-1, which is, you know, the formation that everybody hates to love, loves to hate, he works great. He also works well in a 4-1-4-1, because he's sort of like the sole man behind the four.
Well, that's what kind of position he has to be in, I think.
I think if he is in a 4-2-3-1, then he has to be with someone who's way more energetic and will do a bit of his work. So Vidal, for example. Perfect.
But they have a player to do that.
Sure. But if he plays in a 4-1-4-1, then Vidal still has to be in the middle. Mm-hmm. And they just need whoever's defending basically needs to step up out of the line a bit. Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't think that energy, though, has been Bayern's problem in midfield.
Well, their general energy is lacking, but I think Lahm taking the pace out of the game is what will make Lahm more effective. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, that pace is wide. When I say taking the pace out of the game, I mean take the pace out of the areas in which Lahm will be exposed in. Mm-hmm. And if you play him in midfield, then don't play high up the pitch where Philipp Lahm has to continuously track back on the break. But play him as someone who can be involved in build-up play and just basically be the middleman. But Bayern don't necessarily need that if they play with real wingers. So be interesting to see.
Yep, very interesting. So thanks for listening this week, and thanks for the questions. You can always send us questions at the Tribuna Podcast on Twitter. Actually, it's at Tribune Podcast. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's. I'm Davis_VanOptorp on Twitter. And again, if you like the podcast, we definitely welcome you to write a good review
a bad review with good stars. Just say John doesn't know what he's talking about, you know, video technology nonsense, whatever.
But anyways, feel free to share your positive opinions on our iTunes page. We'd really appreciate it. But yeah, from all of us here at the Tribune Podcast, we'll be around next week, so we'll hope to see you then.